Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name's Barbara P. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, April 29th, and today we're reading from the Big Book. We're on page 34, the second paragraph, beginning with, for those who are unable to drink moderately, and ending with, no matter how great the necessity or wish. Today's readers are Kimberly G. on the 12 Steps, Penny C. on the 12 Traditions. Readers of our text will be Marge O. starting us off and closing us out will be Sally A. Our newcomer reader is going to be Reva P., our host of the second hour. Don't miss it, is Pete B., and Kathy S. will be doing our announcements. Let's see, reference numbers for yesterday, Tuesday, April 28th, the 7 a.m. is 23407, the 10 a.m. is 23408. And if anybody is unmuted, please check and mute yourself. Thanks so much. Get a nice quiet line. The OA preamble, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So I'll now ask Kimberly G. to get us started and read the steps.
Good morning. This is Kimberly G. from Montana, here to read the 12 steps. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry these messages to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
Great. Thanks so much, Kimberly G. Kelly C., could you read our 12 traditions, please?
Yes. Good morning, Barbara, and good morning, everybody. My name is Penny C., recovered compulsive overeater from the Boston area. The 12 traditions. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thanks so much, Penny C. We appreciate you. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phones. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 34, second paragraph, for those who are unable to drink moderately, ending with, no matter how great the necessity or wish. And I'd like to ask Marge O. to get us started with that reading.
Good morning. Marge O. from Massachusetts. Gratefully recovered a day at a time. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he is already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever. Yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it. This is this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or wish. Hello, everyone. Thankful to be able to do service for the month of April. My name is Marjo, and I am definitely a person who is unable to eat moderately. I tried that way back when I first started the program. Some people said that, 3 moderate meals a day, nothing in between. And I did that, except before I knew it, moderate, we became larger and larger amounts. And then occasionally I would honestly believe that I could have one of these, one of those, one brownie, one piece of whatever, and it wasn't to be. It's not in my character. Once I get into anything that is quote an alcoholic food for me, then I couldn't stop. The race was on. How much could I get in before everybody came back into the house? How could I get out of here and maybe have a couple of cookies in my pocket, or get up in the night to feed the baby and then go all the way downstairs, which was totally unnecessary, but I had to go downstairs so I could have a little bit to eat. And I tried many diets, and back in the day, every magazine that was printed, including Reader's Digest, always had the answer for you. I just didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know that I just couldn't ingest any of it, that I had this alcoholic personality, and once I got into anything that was truly out of that alcoholic list, which I didn't find till I came. Actually, I used to hear it at meetings just before I came to Visions. I started to hear speakers talk about alcoholic foods, and it was bingo. And I wasn't eating at that point. I wasn't overeating. I wasn't imbibing in any of the foods. I just didn't, those foods, I didn't know what to call them. They were just foods that were off my list. I couldn't have them. They didn't belong in my food plan. That's all there was to it. And, you know, we've talked about willpower and all the ways that we try to dance around this disease and call it anything but, you know, what it is, which is, for me, an alcoholic personality. So there was so much more work to do besides putting down the food. But I had to start with that. It had to really take a look at my food plan, what was in it. You know, what was I being as honest as I thought I was being? Because it's easy to lie to yourself when you have this personality, as far as I'm concerned, and pretend that all is well and that I feel fine every day, but it wasn't so. So I think for a day at a time and asking my higher power for help and talking to people and giving service, then I can have a right-sized day. You've heard that in this book, too, right size. Actually, I think it's in the step book, the 12 and 12. But anyway, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad I have a fellowship, and I'm truly glad that a day at a time, the food stays in its place, and I don't give it a lot of thought anymore. I'm just grateful that I have this well-being, and at 80 years old, I get up every day and do pretty much what I want to. So I thank you.
Well, thanks, Marge, for getting us started. We appreciate you. All right. So although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your shares to every third day in order that others might share their experience, too. I'm going to go ahead and take a list of people. So go ahead. Let me know if you'd like to share.
Sally A.
Florida.
Bonnie B.
Sally. I heard Bonnie. I heard Rivka.
Marilyn T.
Lisa Jo B.
Marilyn. Lisa Jo B.
Reva P.
Lisa C.
Reva.
Reva.
And Lisa C. Let's stop there for a minute. Reva. Okay. Here's what I have, and we will be taking another list of names, so stand by. But who I heard so far was Sally, and I'm sorry, I know there's more. I know there's more. Sally A, Bonnie B, Rifka R, Marilyn, Lisa Jo B, Reva P, and then that's Lisa C. So that's who I have so far. Why don't we get started with that list, and then we'll have time for at least another half a dozen people. Okay.
What did we read this morning? I'm sorry to interrupt. What did we read this morning?
Page 34, second paragraph, for those who are unable to drink moderately. Just that paragraph. Great. So, Sally A., you are up and running.
Thanks so much, Barbara. I wonder what you drink in the morning that gets you so chipper. I would love to drink it, too. It's Sally A. in New York. I'm recovered. Thank God. I just celebrated 1 year of recovery, and it's a miracle. It's absolutely a miracle because it was actually God who did that for me, not with me. I want to share on a couple of sentences here. Of course, it starts out with, this whole paragraph is really the epitome of step one. They're talking about being able to, how to stop, if the reader desires to stop, and we know that this disease is about whether you can control what you're eating, if you can stop. In my case, the only way I could stop eating things that were really trigger foods was when it was all gone. That was pretty much it, when it was all gone. And that didn't mean that I couldn't go out and get more. But going on, it says, whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose. And that is speaking to the fact that this is a progressive disease. That sentence rare right there, to the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose. And we all come to the program at different extents in our bodies, in the allergy of our body, and in the mental aspect, the obsessive and the compulsive disorder that we each have. Then going down the page, there was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. And that, of course, is the baffling feature of my illness, my dis-ease. And I would just want to say this morning that I've learned finally, after 40 years in this program, that it's about God having all the power. I have nothing to bring to the table except that it's God's power in harmony with my willingness to be obedient and to listen for that still small voice that guides me through the day, letting me know which way to turn, what to do, what to say, and not to say that I've become a robot, but to be in such a relationship with my higher power that it boils down to God's power in harmony with my obedience to God's will. That's where the willingness comes in. We see that word willingness all over these pages. Mm-hmm. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Valley A. Bonnie B., you are up next. You'll be followed by Riska R.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for your service this morning, Barbara. Sorry I called you Tina when I first opened up. Thank you, Marge, for the opening, and Sally for that beautiful share. Bonnie B., recovered today by the grace of my God, living in the state of Florida. You know, that this paragraph to me speaks of, as Sally just said, the first two steps. I mean, the whole book, I mean, the first four paragraphs in the big book talks about the first two steps. And I have to come to that place where I acknowledge, admit, fully concede, I can't stop. And this is the problem with that. This is what was so hard for me. There were times when I could stop. I used to have people in my family say, you have more willpower than anyone I have ever met. And I did appear to have a lot of willpower in a lot of areas, and even in this area, until it didn't work. And that's what was so baffling to me. So for anyone that is here who hasn't maybe crossed over yet and is back again at the starting line, not a problem. This is a process. It was a process for me. It's been a journey for me. There are things I did not understand until I understood them. And part of it is just walking the steps out. That utter inability, that means complete, absolute, and outside of self-control. I am powerless against all of it. I have no choice whatsoever. The choice has been removed when I ingest certain substances. So I need to be rigorously honest about what those substances are, along with the behaviors that are connected to them. And without God doing that for me, I can't do it. I've tried. I've tried over and over and over. I tried many times in this program. I spent 2 years in this program in bouncing in and out of what I would consider to be complete abstinence because of foods that I negotiated over. And they were foods that other people that didn't have my DNA would say, for crying out loud, you can't get fat on fruits. But I'll tell you what, I binged on fruits. And so again, that brain thing, I have to be honest, rigorously honest, and then I have to invite God in, because if God doesn't do it for me, I'm back at ground zero again. I am so grateful that there is a solution, and I am so grateful that we have the gift of living in recovery for today if we so choose to lean in to this beautiful program. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Bonnie B. Appreciate you. Riska R., you're up, and you'll be followed by Marilyn.
Good morning. It's Rivka R., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Maryland. Thank you so much, Barbara, for your service and for the great share so far, just related to everything. So this utter inability to leave it alone. Oh, I mean, to me, this is talking about obsession. Okay, in the dictionary, I looked up obsession, and it says an inescapable preoccupation. And that's what I had. I had an inescapable preoccupation with food. A few years ago, my brother returned a letter I'd written to him 56 years ago when I was 15. And in it, I had written, and the food, it's just an obsession. And I had no idea what I was really saying then. Like, I had no idea this obsession would run my life like a vicious tyrant and cause such misery and havoc. You know, the disease is like being caught in a riptide. You know, the powerful swimmer can't fight a riptide. The only thing to do is not fight it, but float and then swim parallel to the shore until you're out of the... Spent years fighting the riptide, like, and of course getting nowhere, you know, and it was just exhausting and demoralizing, all the schemes and plans and diets and the determination at this time I was going to fight that riptide and be successful. Like, the only thing that has ever extricated me from that riptide, and it's really the riptide of my self-centeredness, you know, is the solution that's in this big book. You know, I love the image, like the big book as a floaty. Like, the big book is the best floaty I could ever have. You know, it teaches me that, you know, that what I need to live, to be, you know, to be abstinent, to work the steps, to trust and rely on my Creator, you know, guides me to relax. And I can float and surrender and swim parallel to the shore, and God can bring me safely in. And I can finally exist in the space between times to eat without obsession. And I know I'll be okay. And when I do eat my three meals, I say, I actually have a little card. I say, God is here. I am safe. I can slow down. I can trust. I have enough. You know, there's no safety fighting a riptide. And there's no safety living in obsession. But there's all the safety I ever need when I surrender to my Creator's will for me today. And thank God that I'm here. And thank God that you're all here too. And have a blessed day. I pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Rivka R. Let me refresh Marilyn, you're going to be up next, followed by Lisa Jo B. And let me go ahead and refresh where we are. We're on page 34, second paragraph, for those who are unable to drink moderately, reading just that paragraph. So Marilyn, you're up.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Marilyn T. from Ohio, and great shares this morning. Thank you, everybody. And yes, you know, when I came into OA, I was just so happy to find that what was going on with me, because I could go on all these diets and I could lose the weight and white knuckle it. And as soon as somebody complimented me, I was off and running back into the sugar again. And then there were days that I thought, why am I not eating compulsively today? And as I look back, those days were the days that I wasn't eating my alcoholic food, but I still didn't have a spiritual God in my life at that time. And it took me to get into the Big Book Step Study to really have a God in my life. Because even in OA, I lost a lot of weight and stuff, but I just kind of felt like I was on a diet. I still had a hard time knowing how to eat properly. And I'm learning so much and going through the book with a new sponsor and listening to everybody's shares this morning. And I'm just so grateful. I'm grateful that I have God in my life today, to not only with the food, but to help me with a lot of my problems and to get out of myself and all these different things that I didn't even realize I was even doing. So I'm just so grateful for this program. So thank you, everybody, for being here every morning that I pass.
Oh, thanks so much. Marilyn T. from Ohio. Lisa Jo B., you're up next, and you'll be followed by Reva P.
Thank you so much for your service. Yeah, I just want to comment on the part that is about the impossibility how it's impossible to quit, to leave it alone, no matter what the consequences are. No, I used to have so much self-will that my hand was gripping onto the food so tightly, and the obsession was so insidious of how to control the food, how to get more of it, how to get more of my drug of choice of food, when to eat it, where to get it, the constant schemes, the constant obsession. I used to beat the crap out of myself, the shame spiral. I was beaten down by the disease, and it had its grip on me just as much as I had a grip on it. The only solution for me has been my relationship with God and working this program, which I believe God was the creator of. I feel that His power has given me the power to follow a food plan, which has been a miracle. I used to switch things out. I used to eat off of it. I couldn't get it. I couldn't adult in the food preparation area. But I feel his power now, and I've found, which is also a miracle, a sense of humility. I've always had an attitude of pride that underneath it all, I thought that I knew it all because I've been in programs since 2007 in other areas, but I don't know it all, and I don't know shit, basically. There's always room for growth. There's always room to learn more, and I had to ask God to accept his help, and God has opened up my heart finally. Like, I spend a lot of time with God. It used to be a checkbox, a suggestion that I check it off, and now it's become a way of life. I look forward to my time with God. I'm his, and my prayer to God is to please help me to accept his help. And I've stopped clutching onto the food, and now my heart is open to receive the gift of recovery. And it's just one day at a time. I don't got this. So with that, I pass. Thanks.
Perfect. Thanks, Lisa Jo B. Reva P., you're up. You'll be followed by Lisa C., and then we'll be taking another list of names.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. You know, I'm reading this paragraph, and the whole thing is just shouting out at me. And the first thing that I'm looking at is the question, how to stop altogether? And I think back to when I was reading paragraphs like this. Aha, here it is. How to stop altogether? They're asking the question. They're going to give me the answer. Wait, here it comes. Here's the answer. How do I control this? How do I get control? And I think what is so clear from this paragraph and all the others is what it's telling me is if I am unable to drink moderately, which means am I a real compulsive overeater, that I have lost the power to choose. You know, I used to hear that this was my drug of choice. Food was my drug of choice. I chose food. Like, I had a choice. I had a choice. I can choose to stop. I can choose to not do this, and I can't. And it's explaining why, and it's not the answer that I thought. The answer is that if I am a real compulsive overeater, I have a physical allergy and I cannot control the amount that I take when I ingest my alcoholic foods, ingredients, and behaviors. It becomes cartons, loaves, boxes. It's just limitless. I have no control. Lost the power to choose. And then, you know, why else I have no control? Because I have the mental twist and the mental blank spot. And I have no control over that, no matter how much the necessity or the wish or the medical reasons for. I can't. I just can't. And the non-spiritual basis, that's without the steps. That's, you know, even in program, abstinence only, without the steps, without doing what I need to do to access power, I'm really screwed, because that mental state will take me back to the substances that I can't control that will eventually physiologically just kill me. So I'm so grateful that this chapter drives home the twofold nature. I can't stop ingesting the alcoholic foods because of that phenomenon of craving. And I can't will my mind to remember, to get me out of it, to have the control to not pick up again. So I really do need power, whether I call it God or whatever I call it. I need the power to differentiate the true from the false, those crazies that take me back to it all the time. And the 90 and 90 and the non-spiritual basis and relying on human aid is just not going to do it for me. So thank you, God, for the clarity of paragraphs like this. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Reva P. Lisa C., you're up, and then we'll take a new list of names.
Hi, good morning. This is Lisa C., and I am a compulsive overeater from New Jersey. Thank you so much for your service. I'm really drawn to the sentence, this is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish, which basically is just a summary of the entire paragraph. But what draws me to it, of course, is this word baffling. You know, I can't understand it. My first pregnancy, I was like, all right, it's on. I get to eat for real. You know, like my whole life, it's like I kind of just knew that I had such a problem and with overeating. And I thought, like, you know, all these depictions of pregnant women as being these ravenous beasts who can eat whatever they want and have these crazy combinations and eat all night long and eat. And I just couldn't wait. And that landed me with a diagnosis of gestational diabetes and way too much weight gain in the first half of the pregnancy. It was the first time that a practitioner had ever looked at me and said, do you have a history of disordered eating? Because I could hide, you know, and I was full of lies in this disease, and I could hide and I could gain some weight. I could lose some weight. It was a constant manipulation, a constant hamster on the wheel, efforting in my mind all the time, always wanting to be thinner, always wanting to eat everything in sight, and just never not feeling like a sausage in a casing. And that is the best way I can define the disease, because it didn't matter what size I was always busting out of my body, busting out of my skin, stuffing myself. And so I look at this and I think about this pregnancy that fear really drove me. I had a diet controlled case, and I had a healthy baby, and I even lost some weight by the end of the pregnancy. But then I had two more pregnancies where I was a lot more relaxed about it. And I still gained too much weight, and I still ate things that I shouldn't eat. And that's baffling, right? That's baffling, because I know that GD could kill my baby. I know that GD could have landed me with diabetes right after giving birth. And I'm still going to be at high risk for the rest of my life. I'm still at high risk. So knowing that did not fix my problem. And in a way, it's like, thank God for having that diagnosis, because it opened my eyes to how serious my problem was in a way that I just refused to see before. And I'm just so grateful that I am in this program, because it is always here, accepting all of us back, no matter what happens. And I'm so grateful to be abstinent today. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Lisa C. We appreciate you. All right. We're going to take another list of names. And please, every third day, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who else would like
Kathy
to share?
R.
Jennifer
R.
Minnesota.
Jennifer, Lexi, and Minnesota. Who is
Minnesota?
Lexi F. Kathy. Okay, Lexi got you. So I have Lucy Kathy R., Jennifer,
Let's see, is that Lindsay?
Lucy.
Is that right?
Lucy.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And I do love
Joe
Lucy.
M.
Okay.
Minnesota.
Jennifer. Joe M. That's you. I thought I heard Minnesota. Okay. So I've got Kathy, Jennifer, Lexi, Lucy, Joe M. Who else did I miss? Anybody else? Probably have room for one more. All right. We'll swing back if we do. So, Kathy R., you are up, followed by Jennifer.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. This is Kathy R. from Massachusetts, compulsive overeater. Thank you for leading the meeting. And I'm sure what I'm going to say has probably already been said. There's been some wonderful shares, but I just really want to share today. The sentence, "This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish." I knew I had that long before it, back in the 70s and 80s and before it was a binge eating disorder. So I always made promises every January 1st. You know, I wished I could stop. And when I went for blood work, the results were not, you know, what they should be. They weren't well received by my primary care physician. I do have a strong family history of diabetes and some sad stories there. The clothes no longer fitting me. You know, clothes that I really liked and wanted to wear. Waking up exhausted and wondering, the first thing I thought about was, when can I go back to bed? So, you know, I wanted to stop. I needed to stop. And I would be motivated for a while. But within days, I was usually right back at it. And how I would go right back at it is, I was famous for buying just one treat. I'm going to moderate, you know, and I've heard this so many times before on this meeting, you know, just going to have two. And just only to find again that I can't leave it alone. Like, I don't understand how people can hide stuff. You know, I just had to eat it. But anyways, okay. So no matter how sincere I was or how urgent with blood work and the diabetes, it just kept repeating itself over and over until I found Overeaters Anonymous. And I couldn't believe it. Like, I learned I wasn't unique, and the other people in the group knew exactly what was going on, what I was living through, because they have lived through it or similar. And that this was the last stop for me, that recovery. It could come through my group to start, and God in the steps. And for this, I'm forever thankful that I have found a way. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much. Kathy R. in Massachusetts. Jennifer, you're up, and you'll be followed by Lexi.
Hey, good morning. This is Jennifer C., recovered in South Carolina by God's grace, by God's power, and by God's way of life. Assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. You know, that sticks out, that word desire, because we learn in the doctor's opinion that we have this other desire, right? And the desire is to get some ease and comfort. And the mind gets locked in on that ultimate ease and comfort that comes at once, immediately, the ease and comfort that comes from just a bite, from just a thought that says, you know what, I'm eating today, forget this. That's the desire that overcomes my will. And once I succumb to that desire, game over, I'm in the spree. The car without brakes, when's it gonna end? I don't know. I'm powerless. Maybe today, maybe it'll just be a day and I'll get back on track. Maybe it'll be a week and then I'll get back on track. Maybe it'll be a month, or maybe it'll be a couple days string together and then back in the food, and then 3 days string together and then back in the food, and then 5 days and then 7 days. And then this book is teaching me how to stop altogether. Bill stopped. He stopped for months without a spiritual awakening. We read about these men in this book that stopped for years without a spiritual awakening. How do I stop altogether? How do I stop altogether? And this book is teaching me that permanent recovery is possible, that the problem can be completely removed. And what's so beautiful about this book is it teaches me that the one problem is that I keep going back, the desire. I keep succumbing to the wrong desire, right? I have these two desires. I desire to stop. I fight my ass off for my recovery. And then I have this other desire that says, you know what? I just want some ease and comfort. And I know it's going to come at once. And then this book teaches me that once that desire is in its place, then I'm a victim of delusions that I can wrest satisfaction out of this world if I just keep managing it well. And that's what God also sets me free from one day at a time, because I cease fighting anything or anyone. And that's what I really, really need recovery from. And God has both. Thank you, God, for the freedom that you give us one day at a time when we follow these directions. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Jennifer C. from South Carolina. And Lexi, you're up next, and you'll be followed by Lucy.
Thank you for your service. Yes, this is Lexi F. from New Jersey. I remember my brother saying to me, Lexi's either 30 pounds overweight or 30 pounds underweight every month when I see her. And I took that as a real insult because I was very sensitive about my weight. But there were times I was over 100 pounds overweight, and sometimes 100. You know, like not 100 pounds underweight, but perhaps 20 pounds underweight. I lost one kidney to cancer, and I have one other kidney. It's functioning 67%, so I have to go on a low potassium diet. There are three fruits that I can have: pineapple, grapes, and mandarin oranges. There are four vegetables that I can have: cauliflower, string beans, cabbage, and carrots. It's very limited, and I had no problem with the help of God transferring to that limited diet. I have to walk my proteins, and I can't have milk. And I've survived two cancer twice, a stroke, Parkinson's disease, and a severe case of mental illness. It's been 12 years since I've been in a hospital. I'm at the hospital. I've come a long way with God's help. I can sit in the midst of blaring music, close my eyes, and feel God's peace. When my daughter blasts the radio in the car when we're driving, I can close my eyes and meditate and have a good meditation. I often do it just to see if I can quiet my mind while there's a lot going on in the room. Sometimes even when people are chatting in a loud voice. I feel very close to God. I think those who have suffered a lot, and I know we all have with this disease, and I'm not saying that I suffered more than anybody else.
That's
just
fine.
That, you know, the suffering of this disease brings us closer to God, I think, than the people without it, the people who are, we quote, 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 normal. And thank you for listening.
Thanks. Lexi F. from New Jersey. Lucy, you're up, and Joanne, you're going to be next. So let me just repeat where we are, page 34, second paragraph, for those who are unable to drink moderately, just reading that one paragraph. Lucy, go right ahead.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. Lucy A., gratefully recovered in New York City. And yeah, this paragraph just reminds me of how I had all the willpower, I had all of the want and thought I could control, but I didn't. Here it is. Where is that? There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. So for me, there was always the urge. I won contests. I won, you know, these competitions at work where we would see who could lose the highest percentage of their own body weight, and I would even win those, thinking that, you know, I was better than everyone else. But what I found after doing the 12 steps, and now I'm almost two and a half years in, is without God, without the reliance on God, the shift from self-reliance is what I needed. Because when I won those contests, very shortly after winning, I was back in the food. It was just for that moment that I won, I got the high, and then I was back in the obsession. And it's the spiritual transformation is what has made the difference. It's relying on God and just going to God for everything. And I look at my life now, for example, my mom went through breast cancer. From when I started the steps, my mom went through breast cancer. Then she was hospitalized multiple times for falls and was in and out of rehab. And she passed away. Today's exactly 1 month that she passed away. And in the past year, my husband was also diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer. And I bring these up in a lot of my shares just to share with those that might be going through something that's really, really difficult right now. When you're in the middle of it, like for me, when I was in the middle of something like this in the past, I would have been controlling everyone, going down that rabbit hole of like mental obsession, just obsessed with the conversation, staying away from anything that brought me peace. I actually stayed away from. I would just be the chaos creator, crazy woman that everyone wanted to stay away from me. But today I am living in a place of just surrendering everything to God. As a matter of fact, Saturday during an OA meeting, I was in the lobby of the hospital where my husband was getting a procedure done. I had my laptop. I brought program with me. I bring program with me wherever I go, and I prepare myself in advance, no matter what doctor's appointment, throughout my mom's whole breast cancer journey, all of her treatments. I always had my OA program. My program was most important for me, but I also did what I needed to do for my family. And Saturday morning, as I was receiving the call from the operating room from my husband's doctor to see how his cancer was going, in the past, I would have been going crazy. Like, let's just put it that way. But when he called me with miraculous news to say, your husband's stage 4 stomach cancer with a tumor that was 2/3 the size of his stomach, the doctor was like, I'm baffled. I'm confused because it just looks like he has a mildly inflamed stomach right now. And I just said, thank you, God. And that's the peace that this program has brought for me. Thank you so much. With that, I'll pass.
Wow. Thanks, Lucy A. in New York. Joe M., you're up next.
Thank you for your service. Hi, my name is Joe M. I'm a compulsive overeater in Minnesota. This paragraph is just full of references to lack of power for those who are unable to drink moderately. Whether a person can quit, lost the power to choose, found it impossible, utter inability. And I think about when I was in the food and I was trying to have power over the food. I didn't understand my condition. I believed that I should have power over the food. I should be able to control it. But here I am, not being able to control it. And in that place, it was baffling because this solution that I thought should apply did not apply to this situation. And then once I came into recovery and was able to accept my condition, which is that I'm unable to control the food, I'm unable to control my spiritual state, not because I'm a bad person, but because I'm a compulsive overeater. I got separated from my original goodness early on, and I had to cover that up. And there was only one way I was going to cover that up, which was to overeat. And there was only going to be one way out of that, which was a spiritual solution. Once I was able to accept that and admit that to my innermost self, my compulsive overeating is no longer baffling to me. And so that's been a great source of peace for me, because I don't have to have that fight inside of me trying to apply a solution that works perhaps in other areas of my life, but does not work in this. And I'm so grateful for this paragraph. It's very rich. So thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thanks, Joe M. in Minnesota. Do we have time for one and a half or two slightly shorter shares? Who would like those?
Jody B., Minnesota.
Sorry, who was
Morrison.
That? And who was in, somebody in Minnesota?
Jody B.
Morrison.
Jody B., and I got you more. Okay, great. Why don't you each take, it looks like, two and a half minutes, and we should be fine. So Jody B., let's get started.
Hi, Jody B., Minnesota, recovering overeater. I, too, love this paragraph, especially that word baffle, because it very much describes the notion of the disease I have. And it was really working with the steps through a Vision for You sponsor that helped me recognize the disease aspect rather than if I would just try harder aspect. So one day, of course, I looked up the word baffle, and it says to totally confuse, perplex, or mystify someone, leaving them unable to understand or solve a problem. And then there's another, I didn't realize there was a noun for baffle. As a noun, baffle is a device that is designed to restrict, deflect, redirect, or control the flow of things like fluids, sound, or light. And when I embrace this notion that I have a disease that does these baffling things, the disease I have creates this disordered thinking. When I approach it as a disease, and my disordered thinking is part of the disease, it's so much different than if I would get into this habit of just thinking about, well, if I would just. And so that idea of embracing the notion of a disease, as it suggests in this paragraph, and really in this whole chapter, it's like, oh, well, what would I do if I had the disease of cancer? What would I do if I had the disease of even pneumonia? I would take the medicine. I would take the instructions from the doctor and thank God for the God of my understanding, who is that doctor, who is that savior, who is that person that can restore me back to my original self. Thanks for listening.
Thanks so much, Jody B. Maura Z., you're up, and you'll have 2 minutes.
Thank you. This is Maura Z., and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Virginia. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it. This utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. Baffling. Confusing. Unable to leave it alone. That describes this disease to a T. And it describes my last relapse very well. I was unable to leave it alone. It was regardless of my desire, regardless of my wish, regardless of my hope that I could put the food down, that I could leave it alone, was taken away. There was no hope. There was no hope as long as I was running the show. I had to finally concede, fully concede to my innermost self that I am a compulsive overeater and that I have no power. There's only one that has power, and that one is God. And I found him. He didn't move. I moved. He wasn't lost. I was lost. Finding him gave me peace, gave me the wherewithal to put the food down finally. And I pray to God that it's the last time I have to put the food down. I don't want to live in that world, in that baffling, unease, dis-ease life that I had before this recovery. It is all in his hands, and I will leave my life in his hands. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Maura Z, and thanks for closing us out today. Thank you to everyone who shared today. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study. This our closing. The share ID for today is 23410. And that is for today, April 29th, the 7 a.m. meeting. We'll now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And will Sally A. close us with that reading from A Vision for You?
Yes, I'm right here, Barbara. Page 164.
Right, starting right. With our book.
Our book, yes, I'm right there. I'm right there. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.